I'm Trey Marone, and welcome to the West Virginia Educast. This is the second part of a two-part episode of the West Virginia Educast covering a County Board of Education's annual evaluation of its superintendent. Our focus in the first part of the episode was on the steps of the overall evaluation process county boards must follow to comply with West Virginia school laws, including both West Virginia Code Section 1846 and State Board of Education Policy 5309. The latter of which was recently amended. We also discussed those amendments in part one of the episode. Today, in part two of this episode, we'll focus on what is arguably the most critical component or step of the evaluation process itself, annually developing by September 15th the goals or objectives on which the superintendent's performance will be measured later in the year. Arrangements for these episodes were made by the West Virginia School Board Association. At the association's website, listeners will find written materials that, in conjunction with this podcast, may be very helpful in understanding the obligations and options of the school board and superintendent in annually establishing the superintendent's goals and objectives. Joining me now to discuss annually setting a superintendent's goals and objectives is the first of my three guests, Charlene Coburn of the West Virginia Department of Education. Ms. Coburn is the Senior Accountability Officer in the Office of Support and Accountability. Previously, she served as Executive Director of the State Department's Office of Leadership and System Support. Charlene has had a successful career in education that includes experience as a teacher, instructional coach, director of federal programs for a county school system, and service in the Office of Education Performance Audits. She was the State Department's point person in working with stakeholders to recently modify the State Board policy, County Superintendent's Performance Evaluations, Policy 5309. Welcome, Charlene.
Thank you, Trey. I'm happy to join you.
So excited to have you here today. Before we turn to the annual development of setting the superintendent's goals and objectives, can we please take a moment for you to briefly explain what led to the recent changes in State Board of Education Policy 5309 regarding the evaluation of county superintendents?
Yes. You know, as Howard Soofer stated in part one of your podcast, that this code section hasn't changed since 2003. So the reason this policy was approached for review is because it fell within the timeline, the cycle that our current West Virginia Board of Education has established.
So it was more of a routine revisiting of this particular policy, like the State Board has for all of its policies.
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah. And for the benefit of our listeners, can you tell us about the process used by the State Board to review its policy on evaluations of county superintendents and how the amendments to the policy going forward were developed for consideration by the State Board? For example, when I look at the State Board policies that are published for public comment and input, I see a list of stakeholders who were involved in the review process. Can you elaborate on that and also review the other steps of the process?
Sure. There were 11 external stakeholders who were involved and 7 internal stakeholders. This process began with our office facilitating meetings with the stakeholders who were representative of the county superintendents and the West Virginia Association of School Administrators, as well as local Board of Education members and the West Virginia Association of School Board members and Executive Director Howard O'Call. Members of the external group also shared drafts of the suggested changes with their members and garnered their input and brought back additional information. And then when thinking about the internal stakeholders, the primary role was for us to offer suggestions, best practices, and then review the policy for grammar, language, and alignment with other West Virginia Board of Education policies. And then following this process, the policy was placed on comment for 30 days, and then additional changes were made based on the comments received from the public.
Well, obviously, from that process you just described, the State Board values and considers input from a large, diverse group before making changes to its own policies. That's very meaningful. And now, in the first part of this two-part episode, we heard that apart from some changes in word usage, Policy 5309 was revised and then approved last August to include perhaps 5 changes of consequence or something that we need to make sure we take notice of. Is that how you see it?
Yes. First is the requirement that, as it was in 2004, that the policy, when it was initially passed, county boards were required to submit to the state board for approval their written policy, the descriptions, and the process they would be using to evaluate the superintendent. Second in the requirements for the new school year 22-23 is that at least one of the annual goals established for the superintendent must be related to student achievement. And since West Virginia Code 18-46 stipulates that the county board shall evaluate the county superintendent on his or her success in improving student achievement generally across the county and then specifically with lower performing schools, the stakeholder group determined that a goal related to student achievement should be required. And then third is that beginning with that school year, any of the superintendent's goals addressing student success and well-being must support progress of the established county strategic plan goals. So it's very important that all of these goals are aligned throughout this process. And then the fourth change that was included in this policy, in setting the superintendent's goals and objectives, this revised policy requires the county board and superintendent to consider input from other parties, such as citizens and school employees, in setting those goals and objectives. However, the process for doing this will be in a manner that the school board and the superintendent agree upon. And then the fifth and final change is that the general statement to the public about the overall results of the evaluation would also address the superintendent's progress in meeting those goals generally.
Well, thank you. And I know we kind of recapped a lot of the points that were made there in the first episode, but that's very important to kind of put this in context today. And to revisit a point made in part one, these recent changes made to State Board Policy 5309 will first apply to county superintendent evaluations covering the school year 2022-2023. And there is some time built in to this process following the adoption of this amended policy to get county boards ready for that start date, correct?
That's correct. And I'm glad you asked that question because we had several calls from our office asking if this would take place for this current school year, and that was not the case at all. The code requires that the county adopted evaluation process be submitted to the superintendent of schools for review, and then upon review, recommend it to the West Virginia Board of Education for approval. And most counties submitted their evaluation process to our office in November and December of the current year. We have a few districts that have not submitted, but they have been in contact with me and plan to submit for the January state board meeting. And this will give them time and opportunity to plan for the required timelines in the goal setting for the 22-23 school year.
Well, thank you. And this makes perfect sense. You know, the process has been amended, you know, a change by the state board. And then county boards have been given this opportunity to evaluate their own policies, to revise them as needed to meet the new changes, and then to submit them to the state superintendent for review, who will then eventually recommend to the state board the policy, assuming it's, you know, revised appropriately to the state board for approval, all in time to use for the 2022-2023 school year. Correct?
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. So as I was trying to recap what you said, and I thought that made perfect sense to me. Yeah. So, you know, now let's focus on the specific requirement of the state board policy that annually a board and its superintendent must together establish the goals and objectives on which the superintendent will be evaluated later in the year. Based on your work with Policy 5309 and your interaction with boards and superintendents, what advice would you offer boards and superintendents to help ensure that they do develop truly meaningful goals and objectives that will fairly benchmark a superintendent's performance? And do you recommend any best practices? That's a two-part question. We'll take it one at a time.
You know, Trey, superintendents have many responsibilities, and every county has unique challenges. This policy empowers local boards and superintendents to focus on specific areas they would like to address within their counties. Stakeholders involved with the revision were concerned that the previous policy and evaluation process lent itself to misinterpretation, and that the optional criteria for the evaluation process were perceived to be required annually, and to become more of a checklist as opposed to driving county-specific improvements based on data. So in regard to your question about best practices, we recommend that local boards and superintendents review all data that is available to them and then establish goals that are specific and measurable and timely. So in doing this, if you're going to attempt as a district to make some systematic change in your school system, it's important to have a primary focus that will allow for planning for actionable steps that will lead to the improvement that members and the superintendent is reaching for within the district. So this process provides support to the school system in successfully meeting those goals that are aligned to the county strategic plan. And speaking of the strategic plan, that's an area in which the stakeholder group was very concerned about assuring that the strategic plan goals and the superintendent's goals were in alignment so that everything's moving in the same direction for overall improvement.
That's an excellent point. A couple of things out of that response I wanted to highlight there. You mentioned about there was a concern that the previous policy and process lent itself to misinterpretation, that the optional criteria were required annually, and that kind of became a checklist. That's not the case. You pointed that out. There is the one requirement, right, that's based on academic achievement, student achievement.
Right.
And you mentioned that earlier in the podcast, right. But other than that, you pointed out that these other areas are optional. And it sounds like that year to year, I mean, the superintendent and the county board need to get together and figure out what is really best for that particular county. As you mentioned, each county faces unique challenges, and the goals and objectives for that county need to match up with the needs of that county so those things can be addressed locally. You point to data-driven decision-making as the best practice, I believe, which is something I always liked as a board member. That's kind of the way I'm wired. And you provided another great tip to make sure that the goals and objectives are specific, measurable, and timely. You know, that's key, I think, to this process too, from what I'm gathering from your response. Finally, the point you made that I really think we can do a whole nother episode on, a whole nother podcast on, is a county strategic plan. But you made a very important point there of how these goals and objectives that were being developed need to line up with that strategic plan that kind of creates a seamless, you know, overall or overarching objective of the county to, hey, here's our plan. You know, and we've gotten together now and we're figuring out a way that we're going to, you know, our leader, our superintendent, to develop a goal and objective that's going to feed into or support that plan. Is that the way you see it? I mean, that sounds like just a great overall process there of connecting those things. And again, thinking that's going to be a good podcast topic, county strategic plans, so you might be getting another call from me down the road on that. So, Charlene, we appreciate your time and insights in helping school boards and their superintendents navigate the evaluation process in an effective way, and especially in focusing in on the importance of the goals and objective component of the process and your advice regarding best practices for local school boards in this process of doing so.
You're very welcome. We are always happy to help out. Feel free to call.
And that's the Office of Support and Accountability, and make sure that our listeners are aware of that and that you're there and willing to help and further discuss probably any of these topics that we've discussed here today. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Thanks.
My next two guests here are going to share with us their experience as a superintendent and a board president in setting goals and objectives for the superintendent as part of the evaluation process. By all accounts, the Jackson County Board of Education and its superintendent have annually collaborated in an exemplary manner to arrive at goals and objectives that achieve the aims of the evaluation process. Joining us are Jackson County Board of Education President Jim Frazier and the Superintendent of Schools, Blaine Hess. Mr. Frazier is a veteran educator, having taught and coached in a variety of positions and served as a school principal for 24 years. President Frazier has served on the Board of Education. This is his fourth year and as its president for 1 year. Mr. Hess has been superintendent for more than 15 years. Superintendent Hess, too, previously served many years as a teacher and administrator and was selected as the West Virginia Superintendent of the Year in 2013 and 2021. Very happy to have you both here. Welcome, gentlemen.
Thank you, Trey.
Thanks, Trey. Glad to be with you.
Hey, you know, I've been told, it's the word on the street, that in your county, the development of the superintendent's goals and objectives is a genuine and productive collaboration between the board and the superintendent. instead of a process where one side just imposes its will on the other side and the other side doesn't really care or just simply gives in. So what's the story here? Jim, we'll start with you.
Okay, Trey, first, I want to thank you for the opportunity to share my comments here as our Jackson County Board President on the goal setting process of the superintendents in the state. I think Charlene will be happy. I think a lot of my comments kind of align with some of her comments there. So first, I want to start out by saying that Jackson County School System is truly blessed to have Mr. Hess as our school superintendent. He serves our county superintendent for 16 years now. He's been the president of West Virginia Superintendent Association twice, along with holding many other positions. You've already stated, Trey, that he has twice been selected as West Virginia Superintendent of the Year. His experience and wealth and knowledge and wisdom makes our job so much easier. So I just wanted to thank Mr. Hess for all his experience and wisdom and wealth. But I feel as our board president that our school board must lead as a united team, Trey. This team must develop a vision for what our educational system should attain and accomplish. Our team does work together to have open communication, strong collaboration, respect and trust from everyone. All these traits are used when developing our superintendent's goals for each school year. In Jackson County, our county strategic plan is a driving force between all our decisions that the board makes, including the development of Mr. Hess's goals. His goals are always in alignment with our county plan. In Jackson County, our county has been very focused on the improvement of student achievement. Charlene had talked about that earlier. We have become a data-driven school system, I do believe. This commitment to the improvement of our student achievement is the major component in the development of our superintendent's goals. The process we use in our county to develop Mr. Hess's goals and objectives is to first let him develop his goals and action steps. Mr. Hess then shares that information with all the board members to review before the board meeting. The board meets to finalize development of Mr. Hess's goals and has had time to develop questions pertaining to his goals. In an executive session, then, each goal is addressed, discussed, and mutually agreed on by our board and our superintendent. That's kind of how the process works here.
Well, thank you. And Jim, what I heard several times during your answer talking about the setting of goals and objectives was the word team and teamwork. I also heard phrases like open communication, strong collaboration, respect and trust. I also heard about aligning the goals and objectives with the county's strategic plan, and perhaps most importantly, a goal focused on student achievement. Blaine, is that how you see the process in Jackson County?
Yes, Trey. In Jackson County, we approach school improvement as a team effort between our school administrators, our educators, our service personnel, the Board of Education, and the superintendent. This approach to improvement is an important aspect of my evaluation as a superintendent, as well as other administrators at our county office and school level. Trey, even prior to the recent changes in Policy 5309, the academic improvement focus of my evaluation as a superintendent was rooted in our improvement efforts in our strategic plan. So maybe we're a little bit ahead of our time in the way we organize, but again, that's the way we've proceeded in Jackson County. And since our county strategic plan is approved and reviewed by our board prior to my evaluation being developed, it really simplifies that process of developing those goals because they're already aligned to that strategic plan. So that process is simplified. The standard practice, as Mr. Frazier explained, is for me to develop goals and action steps for discussion, to bring those to the board and to start that collaborative process to finalize those goals. And we've been able to do so pretty effectively over the years.
So let's just drill down a little bit further. Can either of you give us an example of a particular goal or objective that became a part of the superintendent's evaluation? You know, how it came to pass through the collaborative process and how it led to the success of the school district? Kind of a real, you know, just an example here for our listeners as to how this process has worked and worked well for you.
Trey, I certainly can give you a relevant example here. As I stated in my first response, our county has been very data-driven when looking at student achievement performance. In almost every board meeting, our board members look at and discuss some type of student data. We are always looking at ways to improve our student achievement. Our board is always hearing and seeing presentations from our county office administrators, our teaching staff, along with students concerning the instructional progress and data. We also discuss instructional practices, programs, and staff development trainings, and upcoming innovative ideas and programs that we feel might improve student performance. In looking at our student achievement data over the past 2 years, our board noticed, Trey, that our student population was continually scoring lower in mathematics than other subject content areas. In our county strategic plan, our lower mathematics scores were addressed in the plan and how to implement solutions on the improvement of our mathematics scores. Mr. Hess clearly saw this as a need also. The need for improving our student achievement in mathematics was a top priority for our board as well. So the improvement of student achievement became one of Mr. Hess's goals. I'm proud to say that under Mr. Hess's direction and leadership, our students' mathematics scores have drastically improved over the last couple of years. One final thought that during our board meetings, I did want to share throughout the school year that we make time to celebrate the successes, especially when it comes to honoring students and staff members for the academic progress and their academic honors and awards. I think that's a strong part that all boards should do. Celebrate your successes.
Absolutely. I agree with that. And honestly, as a school board member, that was always my favorite part of a school board meeting was the success stories from the students and staff alike. I mean, every time, you know, it's a tough, I'm going a little bit off script here, but it's tough. And with everything that a board member deals with and all the difficult decisions and the things, you know, that are in controversy and people are upset about. But those were the times when I was sitting there as a board member that I always reminded myself, this is why I wanted to be a school board member. So I'm glad to hear you point that out. I hope all of our listeners take note of that and make sure that in their school board meetings that they take time and designate it to celebrate successes and to recognize those successes, because oftentimes the public and some others, you know, what they hear and take away from school board meetings sometimes are the controversies or the negative things.
Yes, yes. I agree.
And I loved in your response the thing you said about in almost every board meeting, we look at some type of student data. We hear and see presentations about this. We discuss instructional practices and programs and staff development training. It obviously just shows how important this is to your school district, that these things are really what we're focused on. And I just want to take a minute just to commend you myself for hearing all that in your answer and recognizing the value of that. Blaine, what do you have to add to all that?
Well, Mr. Frazier and I really thought of the same example, mathematics, and that really started, that goal was about 3 years ago. And that kind of coincided at the same time that we were looking at new mathematics materials adoption, and our curriculum group really looked and researched those curriculum offerings. And as we changed our instructional materials, as well as looking at the need for mathematics improvement, again, that was really an obvious goal for our school system, because we weren't achieving in math as well as we were for, say, in reading language arts. So that as we developed that goal, what was really important, I think, were some of the action steps within that goal for improvement. And one of the key factors that I would call the attention or review is the fact that while that was my goal as a superintendent, it also became the goal of every central office administrator, of our principals. It was really just a really team effort, because it was really important that we implement our new instructional materials to fidelity, to really keep track of our progress and really outline our professional development goals, because we know that, you know, the heavy lifting for student improvement happens in the classroom. It's my job as the superintendent, the job of the Board of Education, to provide those resources and the trainings necessary to be successful in teaching students. So that heavy lifting happens in the classroom. At the conclusion of that first year, we were able to show some significant improvements, some of the most significant improvement in the state in terms of our mathematics achievement. And even through COVID, and, you know, some goals are really multi-year goals, not a one and done thing. And this is really true with mathematics. So even through the COVID period, we continue to see growth to some of the strongest scores in the state. And also, as Mr. Frazier mentioned about hearing from teachers and principals, you know, part of our local school improvement council process when they come before the board was to take time to explain what they had put in place at their school in support of our mathematics achievement goals, and to report on the benchmarks data that would show improvement. So again, it's not just my goal, it becomes the system goal, because everything is based back, as we talked before, to the school strategic plan and the county strategic plan. So that's, we picked the same goal, but there's many action steps that include a lot of people other than the superintendent to make it a successful goal.
Absolutely. And I think that's of critical importance. And your leadership obviously shines during that time when you can bring all those people together, the people that are the ones that are going to be doing the work on a day-to-day basis. And that's the students and the staff alike. And your leadership bringing them all together to achieve that common goal that the superintendent and the board have decided this is very important to our school district. That is critical to be able to pull that together. And I commend you for that. I do have a question. In the process of goal setting, have you ever had any instance where a board member or the superintendent, for that matter, wanted a goal and advocated for a goal, but it just didn't make it to the list? And if so, how was that handled? Jim?
Well, Trey, during my 4 years on the board, our board has never been in that situation, thankfully, when a board member or the superintendent advocated for a goal that wasn't included as a goal. Thankfully, we have been able to mutually agree on the goals throughout a collaborative process. And so I guess our board is very fortunate to have that. So we haven't had to deal with that, really.
Blaine, do you recall that ever happening?
No. I think what's important about it, and the reason it probably hasn't happened, is we always, for years, have looked at our strategic plan. And since that's been set before my goals have been set, it kind of just sets the stage for what we have to work on.
It makes sense. Well, let's face it, goal setting needs to be realistic, right? So what advice would you offer from a board's perspective, Jim, and from a superintendent's view, Blaine, to ensure that the superintendent's goals and objectives are helpful, achievable, and especially not over or underwhelming?
That's a good question, Trey. I feel it's important to have a shared vision, as we've talked earlier, on what you want your county school system to attain and accomplish, and it's reflected by establishing the high expectations and developing shared beliefs. Strong collaborative effort with the superintendent is a very important step in this process, as it's measuring your goals against the data, as we've talked about earlier, available regarding student achievement and the operations of your school system. I think all goals and objectives developed by your school superintendent and your board must have some type of objective, measurable performance criteria included in them, so that you can not just say, oh, he might have made it or something. You have to have something measurable when you're talking about when you're evaluating your superintendent. So I think that's an important part.
Excellent. Blaine?
Well, I really believe in our case, it's the expectations set by the board in terms of the academic direction of the district and the board's expectation that the superintendent drive that academic improvement that are crucial to that goal setting process. The board has high expectations of how our county should be progressing in the area of school improvement and of me and my role as superintendent. That level of expectation sets a baseline as to what would be an acceptable goal or a substantial goal to suggest to the board. Since the board is well informed about our performance as a district but compared to state and national achievement levels, they're well positioned to evaluate or provide input on the goals selected so they're not over or underwhelming. They have a good comparison to make between what's happening in Jackson County and around the state and around the nation. Our board's very inquisitive about how we're doing, and they every meeting there are questions of something to do with our academic achievement or what we're providing, what opportunities we're providing to students, as well as the progress of our school system. This high level of engagement by our board is, I think, a driving factor in our performance of an improvement as a school system here in Jackson County.
Thank you. If you could leave us with one particular piece of advice, one word of wisdom for board members and superintendents who want to make the goal setting process work for the good of the school district, what would that be, Jim?
Well, Trey, although the goal setting process is for the purpose of evaluating the superintendent, I think it's important for board members to realize that the goals are really designed to improve the school system and increase student achievement. That's why I strongly feel it's imperative for all school board members that they become knowledgeable about student achievement. We need to learn to embrace and monitor and be able to interpret data so we can use it more effectively to drive the student achievement. I think it's vital that board members and superintendents also work collaboratively. I can't say that enough. You have to be a team and use the student data when developing the superintendent's goals. I believe it will lead to more successful and positive outcomes in the future.
Blaine, what would you say there?
Well, I would just say, Trey, that with all things in the realm of education, relationships are of paramount importance. The relationship between the board and its superintendent is built through consistent and reliable communication about the operations, successes, and the challenges facing the school system. This level of communication and the superintendent's effective leadership over time will foster trust. And this communication of building this relationship of trust and partnership with the board is paramount to the ongoing work that it takes to drive student achievement and to work for overall improvement within the school system.
Excellent. Well, thank you, gentlemen, for sharing with us an approach used rather successfully in your county for setting the superintendent's goals and objectives, something that some school boards might already be doing or others might want to consider. We certainly appreciate your time and input.
Thank you, Trey. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Trey. I appreciate the opportunity to be with you today and share my thoughts about the superintendent evaluation process.
Thank you both. And of course, Charlene Coburn, our guest as well on this episode. Thank her. As a reminder, arrangements for these episodes were made by the West Virginia School Board Association. At the association's website, listeners will find written materials that, in conjunction with this podcast, may be helpful in understanding the obligations and options of county boards of education in making the annual evaluation of their superintendent's performance. Be sure and join us for another episode of the West Virginia EdgeCast, where we discuss interesting topics that are relevant to education law. A dozen episodes can already be found on our website. And stay tuned for an upcoming episode on future topics, one such as medical marijuana in the schools. Until then, I'm Trey Marone, and this is the West Virginia EdgeCast. Thanks for taking a listen.